You're listening to Sky Women's Health Podcast, your evidence-based resource for women's health and wellness, exploring the holistic principles of osteopathy, integrating mind, body, and spirit, designed to empower you as your own healthcare advocate and help you live your best life. I'm your host, board-certified OBGYN, Dr. Carolyn Moyers. You're listening to episode 170, What to Do About Low Bone Density. But before we get into the episode and I introduce you to our guest, I promised you that we would talk about the last 4 weeks of The Busy Brain Cure. This is one of my favorite books that I've recently read, The Busy Brain Cure by Romy Mushtaq, MD. And just as a reminder, week one was setting your goals. Week two was your 7-week sleep challenge where you're setting your going to bed and waking up times. Then your digital detox, 30 minutes to an hour prior to bed on week three. Week four was to practice your brain pause and give you room for just freedom and joy and relaxation. All right, so week five is to biohack your nutrition, looking at, it's not a fad diet, just removing processed foods from your diet, focusing on low glycemic, anti-inflammatory foods, which promotes gut and brain health. And I love that she really takes into account honoring your mind, body, spirit, your cultural background, not saying you can't have any of your comfort food, just being mindful to not have sugar and caffeine at the same time, have one or the other. Week six is fuel, energy, and focus. This is looking at your circadian fasting, where we're not eating a couple hours before bed and then not until an hour or so after being up. Hopefully we're getting our 7 to 8 hours of sleep. And so that's giving us a nice 12 hour window of fasting. And then a healthy fat to each meal. Like, what's a healthy fat? We're looking for omega-3s, things that are rich in omega-3s, such as different fish, nuts, seeds, etc. You can research what are my top foods that are rich in omega-3 and kind of make your list of those that you really like. And this helps to balance our leptin and ghrelin, which is responsible for our, whether we're full or hungry constantly, and it helps to promote a healthy metabolism. And I'd ask, well, what builds up leptin in my brain? Sleep deprivation, stress, etc. So it all goes back to building on the prior weeks. These are little micro habits that we're going to add on. Okay, and then week seven, super brain, super hormones. And the crux of this entire week is really taking into account that your busy brain is not a product of your imagination or a character flaw, and there may be some underlying medical condition. And so she actually gives a list of labs that you could go to your provider, to your doctor, and ask for, because vitamin D deficiency, thyroid disorder, insulin resistance can lead to different health complications. And then week eight is simply putting it all together. Look at your health goals. Where do you stand? How are you feeling? What edits do we need to make? Did we make it to the doctor? Did we get our lab work done? Do we know what it means? So that's it in a nutshell. I hope that you read it. It's a great. I'm actively working on implementing all of this in my life as well. Okay, on to this week's episode. We are talking with the fabulous Dr. Christy DeSabri. I so enjoy her. I met her at the Menopause Society meeting this past year and thought she was wonderful. She's got this new niche practice, Bone and Body Women's Health, and she's just fabulous. She's passionate about bone health, and I think you're going to enjoy this conversation. You can catch her on previous episode 149, where we kind of went through all the details of defining osteoporosis and osteopenia and preventative measures. But today we're focusing more on treatment. I hope you enjoy.
All right. So today we're talking about osteopenia or low bone density and osteoporosis. And we know osteoporosis is a chronic, progressive, currently incurable condition that is going to require some lifelong management, and there's no single paradigm for treatment. But knowing that that's got to be individualized and monitored, I think it creates a lot of anxiety for patients whenever they have the diagnosis of osteopenia. And the general discussion that they get with this low bone density is, you know, good nutrition, your protein intake, your calcium, your vitamin D, your weight-bearing exercises, don't smoke, avoid excess alcohol, right? But then what, right? Is hormone therapy the only thing we can do? So I'm excited to chat through these scenarios with you.
So you just really hit the nail on the head, Carolyn. Osteopenia, osteoporosis are so common, and we often, at midlife don't get a lot of direction from, our internists, our gynecologists, our family practice doctors, unless we see a specialist. And so this is, I started out in OBGYN and also do internal medicine and a specialization in women's health. So I really focus on perimenopause, menopause, and bone health. And I think this is an area that so many women come to me with many questions, and equally clinicians like yourself, doctors, nurse practitioners, who say, how do I manage osteopenia? Or maybe women who have, osteoporosis but haven't had a fracture yet. And we consider that to be primary prevention. And again, to prevent the first fracture, right? Like, we would want to prevent the first heart attack by lowering your cholesterol and prevent your hot flashes from, well, if we think about you being a candidate for, hormone therapy or the non-hormonal option. So it's really, this field is really should be more in the prevention sphere. And I think this is something that we can do as clinicians, and really, again, arm our patients with understanding too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, when we think about that, we have this accelerated bone loss during the menopause transition, yet we're not recommending a DEXA scan until the age of 65. I mean, I'm just like, my palm is on my face. It just feels so ridiculous. So, for instance, I saw a patient today who's 50 who has been on hormone replacement therapy for the last 2 years because she's been symptomatic since having a hysterectomy. And her symptoms have never resolved. Nobody has offered her a different option for her hormone therapy. And if your hormone therapy isn't working, it's either the dose, the route, or the formulation. And she's had a stress fracture, but she's never had a DEXA scan. And I'm like, well, that is step number one here. We're going to get a DEXA scan. We're going to change your hormone dosing or formulation. You know, there has to be some unique individualization to treatment.
Right. And before we started recording, we were talking offline about the Menopause Society, which we're both, active and engaged members of, which is again the society that really instructs the care of midlife women and beyond, whether it be cardiovascular health, breast health, bone health, mood, cognitive, again, and this is a very, evidence-based, as well as practical, I would say, recommendations that we have for our women who are treating other women, or practitioners are treating other women. And this position statement that came out in 2021, actually one of the reasons to do a DEXA scan or evaluate bone loss beyond being female and postmenopausal and family history or medicines or medical history or calcium vitamin D deficiencies, or as you mentioned, stress fractures, is if you come off hormone therapy or are not on the correct dose of
Yes.
therapy, you can, this is a risk factor for bone loss. So, potentially this is a very important thing for women who might, have an antiquated clinician, or thinking that they can only be on hormone therapy for 1 to 2 years or up to 5 years, and then they discontinue. And then when we discontinue, things like genitourinary syndrome of menopause get worse. Potentially hot flashes recur, but again, as we know, many women, some women, these hot flashes go away, but other symptoms can persist. And one of them that we don't feel, again, is silent, because bone loss, is silent unless we have a fracture, is bone loss. So, if you've been on a medication like hormone therapy or raloxifene, or, you've just become, these are, and you come off of these therapies, you will lose bone. I mean, this is proven time and time again. And actually, women with lower body mass or family history will lose more. And if you're vitamin D or calcium deficient, you will lose even more. So again, when we think about what we do, right, you and I are both into, treating women with evidence, treating women, being seen, being heard, under, thinking about the whole, midlife women in perspective, is that, this is one area that's, often neglected. And then down the road, they see a specialist like an endocrinologist or someone like myself with os who have, they have osteoporosis, and they're sort of, their hands are in the air wondering why this has happened. And to us, it's like, well, this is a failure, right? We need to do better. We need to educate better,
Yeah.
better awareness to both, our, this is why we do these things, and this is why I get so fired up on a Friday afternoon about these things, right?
Right, absolutely. So here's what I want us to impart to the patients or to the listeners is, what do we need to be advocating for, because even sometimes as the practitioner, you know, I'm an OBGYN, and even sometimes I feel slightly confused. What do they need to be asking for in terms of what do we want ordered? Is it a straight DEXA scan? Do we want the FRAX calculations taken into account, on our bone density report? And let's just briefly, I know we can, they can go back and listen to our previous episode, but briefly, you know, how do we define that low bone mass, and why are we not really using the osteopenia and then osteoporosis? How's it
Yeah,
defined?
so right. And we, I think we did do a really good discussion, but really in like a thumbnail is that the DEXA, or the dual energy X-ray absorptiometry test, which is a painless low radiation scan of your spine, both of your hips, sometimes your one third of your forearm or radius. If we can't scan some of the other sites, checks, assesses for bone density. We also have a test now called the trabecular bone score, which is a part of a DEXA software. Not every machine has it, but most academic places do. And this is a scan. This looks again more at the bone microarchitecture or bone quality. So that's really important. And in together with the DEXA, which again assesses for bone density, your bone mineral density, and your surrogate marker for bone strength and the bone quality, as well as taking into account your medical, your reproductive history, any medicines, anything that could be, you know, offensive or cause low bone density or increased fracture risk, gets kind of put together with what potentially is a FRAX score or a elevated a fracture risk assessment to help us determine, you know, would you benefit from therapies, which can be, again, therapies with an S, can be lifestyle, can be nutritional, can be pharmacotherapy to reduce your risk of fractures and maintain your bone mineral density. And so really, again, the DEXA is the gold standard for diagnosing osteopenia, osteoporosis. Also, I always mention this, is that having a low trauma fracture, meaning a fracture from a standing height or less, a wrist fracture, a hip fracture, a spine fracture, you know, an ankle fracture, you know, pelvis fracture, sacrum fracture, many of these fractures are, you know, osteoporosis in relation, or they could be stress fractures, which is a slightly different animal. But these are all signs that your bones are saying we needed an evaluation, and potentially, you know, treatment, which again can be a wide variety of things. And when you talk about osteopenia, which really actually the correct term is low bone mass, is how the ISCD likes to have that be called. I think it more aptly names what's going on, low bone density, low bone mass, is that there's sort of two to maybe even three categories of women. Some women are low risk for a fracture, meaning they're T-scores might be in the range of osteopenia, but they have not had a fracture. They don't seem to be at elevated risk when we calculate that risk score and ask all these questions. Maybe you haven't fallen. Maybe you're young age, like most of these women fall between the age of 40 and, you know, 50, 55, or 60. And so sometimes some of those patients, it's yes, let's look at the calcium, look at your vitamin D, look at your exercise, think about prevention strategies like hormone therapy, like but you know, if you're not a candidate for those things and you're high risk for breast cancer, like our SERM medications or selective estrogen receptor modulators, like raloxifene or even potentially tamoxifen, bazedoxifene, some of these medications. And then if you're higher risk, again, I wish you could see my hands, but if you're sort of that medium to higher risk category of elevated FRAX score, we think that is more than, you know, that you have osteopenia, but your fracture risk seems moderately elevated. Generally, this is if your hip fracture risk is greater than 3% and your major osteoporosis related fracture on that calculation is more than 20%, we think that you meet category, your bone is, your fracture risk is high enough to actually treat you for something like osteoporosis. So you've kind of passed that threshold that we think, wow, there's something we need to be done about this. And generally that's women who might be on aromatase inhibitors and losing bone mineral density because they're on a medicine that we know will reduce your risk of reduce your bone mineral density and elevate your risk of fracture. Sometimes it's women who might be on steroids or glucocorticoids for long-term, have rheumatoid arthritis, be on other medications, or you might be precipitously losing bone density, which again requires an evaluation about why, but then we need to treat that so that it doesn't continue to happen. And so the most common I see are the latter, as well, I would say, as the patients who get a DEXA scan, women who get a DEXA scan every 2 years or every 3 years, and it just kind of trickles down slowly. It's kind of like, I call it like the trickle effect. It's like every couple of years, they lose a little bit of bone density and people say, well, let's see what your next one shows. And let's see what your next one shows. And eventually
it's just watchful waiting
enough,
until it,
right. Eventually, if you lose enough bone density over 10 to 10 years of or 12 years of watching, by 60, 65, you will develop osteoporosis, or your fracture risk will exceed what we thought it was when you're 50, right? So this is where, again, like astute intervention really is important.
Yeah, absolutely. And so as that's what I really wanted to talk about today is what is our intervention, and starting with a low bone density individual, somebody who's got the diagnosis of osteopenia and they come and they want to counsel about their options. I think, as you mentioned, you have to kind of take that into consideration with, well, what medications, what chronic medical illnesses do they have? Do they have a history of a fracture, multiple fractures? What is their overall score or risk for a fracture?
Absolutely. Yep. And we do that every time, even if women have osteoporosis or
Sure.
osteopenia, right? This is very important. And right, so to get into the options, because this gets a little long-winded, so thank you for sticking with us, is that, this is, again, very individualized. Like everything else that we do, it really should be individualized. Bisphosphonates, are not for everyone. Oral alendronate, which has been FDA approved since 1997, a fine medication, it has some good efficacy. But for women who are at very high risk for fractures, meaning you have a very low bone density, like you've had a T score of -3 or lower on your bone mineral density in your spine or your hip, primarily, those sites are really very integral into predicting your risk for fracture. If you've had any osteoporosis related fracture, again, whether it be, oh, I just, fell and slipped, and anyone would have broken their arm or broken their pelvis, these are really sentinel events that, we really need to call attention to. And that's what puts you at a higher risk category. And then again, aging, we know that one in three women fall over the age of 65. I'm very proactive in my practice, both, in my physical practice, and then as well as I have a telemedicine practice across the country to see a lot of women. And balance, strengthening, all the posture exercises are all very important, because if we fall and you fracture that way, then, again, this is something that's a modifiable risk factor. So if you're falling, if you've been intolerant to a therapy, if you've had fractures, if you have a certain medical condition that might predispose you, like things like Parkinson's or MS, these are all high risk features that really, when we think about treatment, we don't offer you just the basic box. We say you need to be on a therapy that's actually going to reduce your fracture risk exponentially and build the bone density. And we call these medicines bone building medicines, or osteo, which stands for bone, anabolic medication. So we have a couple in our category, in our armamentarium. I talk about them every day. So some of them are self-injections, which sounds scary, but I think now in our world of giving, GLP-1 or, the
Sure.
medication that semaglutide, and patients are giving themselves these once a week. These are not those cl that class of medicines, but it is a daily self-injection, which stimulates bone formation through something called the PTH receptor. And these are actually very small, 31 gauge needle. They are very acceptable to a lot of patients once they, kind of, it's really in their hands, and is something that they can do to really stimulate bone formation. And these medicines, both called teriparatide, these are their generic names, teriparatide or Forteo, or abaloparatide, also referred to as Tymlos. These medicines are, have been around since actually 2002 and 2017 respectively. So we have a lot of good evidence. They're very similar in relation, but they have some nuances between them and how we prescribe. And so they're very effective to stimulate new bone formation. They reduce your risk of vertebral fractures by upwards of 80%. So if people are at high risk for spine or vertebral fractures, or they've had one, these are really my go-to if they don't have any contraindications. The main people who cannot use these medicines are if you've had radiation to the bone, like, for example, breast cancer, if you have kidney stones, if you have something called like osteosarcoma, or if you're like, less than age 20. So they're very effective medicines, do require some counseling, do require some, like, working together and working with someone who really can understand how to prescribe and, work through these options with you, but really are quite effective. And then we have In that class, if we think you're at high risk for fracture or very high risk, we have another medicine that's actually administered by a healthcare provider. It's called romosozumab, also brand name is Evenity, which is a medicine that actually both stimulates bone formation and it inhibits bone resorption by working on something we call sclerostin. So it actually inhibits the inhibitor of bone formation. It's a very good option for women who have both low spine and hip bone mineral density, as it reduces the risk of both these types of fractures. And it's given by, again, a nurse medical assistant, healthcare provider once a month for 12 months, for 1 year. And then all of these therapies, when you're high risk, this is the biggest, I think, caveat that gets missed by patients and providers, is that we can build and boost the bone density, and then we need to maintain the bone density. Just like if you were to, do a couch to 5K and you're sort of like, okay, I can get to 5K and running, and now I need to be able to maintain that if I want to do another run. Or if you're, again, thinking about, continuing to resistance and continue to exercises, we need to build the bone and then we need to maintain it. And if you're high risk for fracture, these medicines are very effective at reducing your fracture risk, even within the first couple of months of use, and then beyond. So there's a lot of, again, nuances, but there's also a lot of options. So I never think that, osteoporosis needs to be sort of an inevitable part of aging, or fractures or height loss or things like that, disability, or an inevitable part of aging, because I really think we're changing that paradigm with women's care.
Oh, that's very exciting. Yeah. And I love the ease in which you talk about treatments and understanding that whenever we stop these medications, we're not just done with therapy. Right now, we want to use an anti-remodeling drug to help maintain, as you were mentioning.
Exactly. And a whole host of class in that medication category. So things like hormone therapy, things like bisphosphonate, things like SERMs, things like injectable bisphosphonates called zoledronic acid, or another one, which is called denosumab, which is a different whole class of subcutaneous medicines. So that are used, continuously. So there are many different options. And again, it's a very individualized conversation, because again, the goal, just like the goal of many of the things we do, are to, manage the symptoms of osteoporosis, of which there are few symptoms, but pain and back pain and height loss and fractures lead to many symptoms of both, changes in your, honestly, your height and your physical appearance, but also, patients who have a hip fracture, this is really changing the trajectory of their lives and even the length of their lives. So these are why we really focus on, treating these silent symptoms of menopause, because eventually, as we know, with genitourinary syndrome of menopause, or GSM, which is vaginal dryness, painful intercourse, urge incontinence, right, your recurrent UTIs, many women develop these things without knowing it, and then are sort of seeking treatment, on the back end, and it's too late. We're kind of like, okay, now we have the kitchen sink approach, which we don't always.
And I think that it's important, that you talk through what are the side effects of these medications. If you discontinue them, we don't want to just cold turkey discontinue, because from my understanding, within a couple of years, you're back where you started from.
Yes, exactly. And that's the thing with, the bone forming agents followed by the anti-remodeling or bone prevention of bone resorbing agents, is that these work in concert, really, again, to maintain bone density, maintain strength. And remember, I like you, practice a medicine that is, we think about all, comprehensive. So it's, one medicine isn't going to do everything for us, right? We have things like calcium, which we talked about in our first episode, but calcium, vitamin D, exercise, protein intake, controlling medical history, things like those things that all, pull together when we think about, maintaining bone health and honestly maintaining strength. We're talking more about muscle mass now, as I think more attention is being focused on that, and joint pain, and and being able to move without pain and independence. And so these things are all connected. Okay, I think sometimes bones are like, oh, thought about sort of like not important, and the muscle mass is more important, and the protein intake. But guess what? That protein and muscle mass also supports your bone health. So all really important and connected.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it blows some people's mind that our bones are constantly remodeling, right? They're not static.
No, and that's where when p a lot, I mean, even today, I had a patient ask me, so like, she's in her 50s with osteoporosis, like, what does my future look like? I'm like, well, it looks you haven't had a fracture, and we're going to treat your osteoporosis so we can reduce the risk of fracture. And so, right, I think the bone health piece, is one we're really working on. Again, there's less media attention, there's less,
Sure.
physical features out there. And I think, again, bone health is connected to some high loss, but and some connotations of aging, which I know we have mixed feelings about, of course. But I think, again, this is just an area that, just like muscle strength and just like genitourinary syndrome menopause, that we can, again, take control over and have some power over. And I think that's really exciting.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, because on average, women lose about 1 t-score of bone mass across a normal menopause transition. And that's nothing to scoff at if you're starting, if you're thin, if you have a family history of osteoporosis, et cetera. So it's definitely, has to be taken into consideration. And we have to be getting our DEXA scans earlier, consider screening those who are going through the menopause transition. Now, my specific question for you is somebody who has a diagnosis of osteopenia or low bone mass, and they're a low risk factor for osteo or for a fracture, should I say. So at that point, is it reasonable if they're taking their hormone replacement therapy, they're getting adequate vitamin D and calcium, they're doing their weight bearing exercises and strength training, is that enough?
Well, you said the patient with low bone mass or osteopenia, maybe in their 50s at their baseline, and you said that they had started on hormone therapy for, correct, for, and again, a lot of my patients and women see me sometimes for bone health, but also, again, there's such a constellation of menopausal symptoms that hormone
Absolutely.
therapy, if you can safely or no have no contraindications, also help. So I would say yes. I mean, it's always important to make sure patients are getting an adequate amount of calcium. Sometimes there's like sort of a brush stroke about calcium, like, oh yeah, I'm getting enough. I eat cottage cheese a couple times a week. And then when you actually do a calcium dietary inventory, you need 1200 milligrams of calcium. And so sometimes that does need to happen with either fortified foods or with supplementation, making sure you've had a vitamin D checked, making sure your body mass is normal. I talk a lot about alcohol, again, about fall risk, about other healthy exercise and lifestyle habits. And then I would say, yes, if that is a, if you are doing That means that you are doing everything you possibly can at the time of, perimenopause to menopause to affect your bone density in a positive way. And then if you can't take hormone therapy, there are other things that you can do to maintain bone mass. And then again, checking that bone mineral density and, potentially 2, 3 years, down the line, if there's no new, clinical, nothing new clinically, is really appropriate. I think sometimes we do baseline and then we don't check it for like 5, 10 years, and then patients have osteoporosis and are like, why didn't I didn't know that that could happen. Again, we want to
Right, it
be,
just snuck up on us.
yeah, checking this serially. So like every 2 to 3 years, I mean, we're going for our mammograms, every year now, and doing automated breast ultrasounds and things. So I almost feel like it should be in like the frequency of like the Pap smears, right? Like every 3 years, that we
Yeah.
should be doing, 2 to 3 years. But if you have osteoporosis and you're at high risk, meaning you're had a fracture, you're on treatment, generally, insurance sometimes gives us a little trouble, but we can get DEXA scans done, and they should be done every single year. And that's what I do in my practice, and that's what I recommend, and that's what I, sh share with the insurance companies, like our clinical guidelines and why. If you're on a medication, like let's imagine you're on a statin or cholesterol lowering medicine, well, we're checking your cholesterol every 3 months, 6 months, at least every year. But if you're on a bone density medication, even I would consider hormone therapy that, and we say, oh, just check your bone density in a couple of years, like we'll just, and then a couple of years later it's not different or it's worse. Well, what benefit is that to anyone? Nothing. We need to have some checkpoints, and I think that the DEXA is a really important
Yeah.
checkpoint.
So let me clarify that or just make sure I'm understanding you right. So if we're osteopenia, high risk treatment, we're going to recommend it annually. If we're osteopenia or low bone density, about every 2 years, am I understanding that you're
Correct.
saying if we screen and we're normal, then we don't just like wait until they're then 65 if we've done it and they're 54 and, postmenopausal. You would
I would
say that with
say,
a cadence of every 3 to 5 years.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, some of the larger scale studies, you know, again, look at the trajectory of time that it takes for 10% of women to develop osteoporosis if they have a normal bone density at the age of 50, and they say, you know, don't need to screen until 65. But generally, again, things change, right? A lot of things change, like life
Sure.
changes between those decades of life, and sometimes
Right.
injuries or mobility or nutrition or other things. I mean, autoimmune conditions, as we know, are so, I see so many women with autoimmune conditions contributing to bone loss between 40 and 60, because this is when these diagnoses of hypothyroid or celiac or, you know, autoimmune conditions are being diagnosed. And I think we underappreciate that. So I would say if you have a normal bone density, or you have touch of osteopenia, or someone says that, I would say at least every 5 years.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today for your helpful information. It's concise, it's easy to digest, and it's hard to make bones sexy, but
I do a good job. We have in my office, we have like squeezy bones that are really fun for stress relief. We have
sure.
we try to make it fun, because again, and I give my patients and my women like just, you know, a lot of advice and a lot of like pretty pictures and colors, and try and understand, you know, what the bone mineral density, trying to dissect it, because I think that sometimes these numbers and pictures and pages just sound really scary with all the numbers. I kind of liken it to, you know, as a business owner now, like looking at my profit and loss statement, or looking at, you know, like all the things that we need to know for accounting. And so I try and really make it easy. And I think that trying to find someone who can do that for you. And I am, if anyone is listening, see patients virtually and do virtual consults and look at images and work together. And it's been so rewarding to see a lot of women across the country. So
And the
really
name of
fun.
your practice is, tell everyone how they
It
can find you.
is, yeah, bone in the name. So it's Bone and Body Women's Health. And I have a practice outside of Chicago. And I have a website, which is just bo www.boneandbody, WH.com. And then I'm also on Instagram and some of the and YouTube and all the fun things. I try and put out some content about osteoporosis. So,
Fantastic. Okay. Well,
yes.
thank you so much. This has been fun.
So much fun. Thank you for fitting us in. I'm so happy that you included this topic. You have such a great breadth of women's health topics for people to understand. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. All right. Until next week, be well.
Okay.
Thank you for joining me on Sky Women's Health Podcast. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to stay up to date with our latest content. This episode is proudly sponsored by Sky Women's Health, your go-to destination for midlife gynecology in DFW, specializing in perimenopause, menopause care, sexual medicine, and a unique thing we offer is osteopathic manipulative treatment for pregnant and postpartum patients. While we are nobody's primary OB, we collaborate with your OB to provide you comfort through your pregnancy. Stay tuned for more empowering discussions. Until next time, be well.